I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 490. E3 is dead.
That's why we're devoting 80 minutes to it.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
E3!
I know. Oh, I'm so hyped. But at the same time, I'm also so bummed. Because we are not in LA this week.
Nope.
For the first time in a decade of doing this.
For you. I haven't been to E3 in, like, the last 3 years.
Yeah, you haven't been in the last 3 years. But, you know, hey, here's looking forward to maybe next year. We'll talk about that in the podcast later. But for the first time in the Esh history, which is 10 years strong, this is the first time that neither of us is going to be in L.A. actually covering the event. Like, this is bad.
But our presence is there.
Oh. The Esh will be felt because we've got Bjork in there, we've got KBD in there, we've got Hamsterman, so April, Evan, and Ben, you know, their mortal names, are in LA covering it. Our homeboy Louie was supposed to be there, but he wasn't actually able to get a hotel room in time. You know, it's one of those things. I was like, hey, you know, you should probably get on that, like, now and now.
Now? You should have gotten on it, E3 last year.
Because the Figueroa is closed, so there's, like, a lot of limited options close to the convention center. And you want to be close to the convention center. Like, you want to be close to the convention center, not just because of, like, oh, you're close to the venue? Because, yeah, you could be at a hotel that's on a shuttle line. But when you're trying to, like, go to evening events and you're having to haul shit back to your room,
I don't miss that at all.
You don't want that shuttle back to your room to take a half hour before
you don't want to be that person who's like, you know what? I'm just going to roll up to this party with my bag and act like I got the hottest shit.
Don't do that. Don't do that, bro. Don't do that.
Been there. There.
Yep. And I told you, no, just come on. Drop your stuff up in the room. You're like, no. I'll meet you guys there. It'll be fine. And then 10 minutes into the party, you're pissy because you got 50 pounds of shit on your back.
Yep. Here I am with my nice, like, booby shirt on, but here's this weird orange backpack. But yeah, I kind of look like I just got off the bus.
Oh, that's right, because I had given you one of my CES bags.
Yeah.
For the show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, anytime we got up to move around in the party, hold on, guys, gotta grab my bags.
Gotta put my bag under the table. Everybody watch my bag, because, you know, I got $3,000 worth of equipment in there, plus swag. So, yeah. So that's a rookie mistake for anybody going out to E3.
Like, I don't miss it at all.
If you're doing evening events, drop your shit off in your room before you go. Your back will thank you. Your feet will thank you. Your friends that you are traveling with throughout the evening will thank you. Just
make sure you stretch.
Yes.
Hydrate. Eat stuff with potassium. Eat. Like spinach.
Seriously, like, carry a banana. Oxide magnate,
whatever it's called. That helps with muscles.
Have at least one acai drink a day. Just be good to yourself.
If you have a bathtub, like, take a warm bath one night just so that your muscles relax.
That's the truth.
If you don't scrub, that's fine, but your muscles need to be relaxed.
Your muscles need it, dog. Your muscles need it. So,
because there's nothing worse than taking a seat after an interview and, like, your toes begin to curl because they all Charlie horse, and then that Charlie horse travels up to, like, the mid of your thigh, and you can't say nothing because you can't look like a punk-ass bitch.
Right.
While you're trying to eat your $8 hot dog. Because you know I had to bring that back.
Wait, wait. The hot dogs are $8 at PAX. The hot dogs are $13 at E3. Like, don't... You haven't been there in a while. They really got jacked up. You'd be pissed at that noise.
I would be. At least the $8 hot dog at PAX East was, like, a foot long. So I was like, all right, that's a big hot dog. I can't hate on you that much.
Right. You did get your $8 worth. And as I recall this year...
Wait.
Weren't you the one that actually said, my bad, they're $7?
I took a picture of my, all right, it's $7 and it's a foot long, okay.
You're basically paying, like, a little bit over a dollar an inch. Like, it's a kosher dog, too. So, like, it's worth it.
Well, there was one stand that the hot dogs were that long, and that one was the $7 one.
Yeah.
So I was all right, this works.
The mac and cheese bowl, though.
The mac and cheese.
Right?
That was good. That was so good.
And it was worth the money. All right. So anyway, let's get back to E3 and not food. But seriously, guys, for anybody going to E3 for your first time or, you know, just looking for some advice, seriously, be good to your body. There's a lot to see and a lot to do. There's a lot of walking that you're going to do. It's going to be a beautiful week in LA. So make sure that you stay hydrated, that you've got, you know, great cushioning on your feet. Because let me tell you, there's nothing worse than being 2 days in and already having your legs and your feet be wrecked. And knowing you've got other things that you
want to
eat.
Make sure to take care of your body and your mind.
Truth.
Have fun.
Yeah.
Go out and be social, but don't break down for 4 days and then wonder when you get home why you can't sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're not about that life, breaking the dawn, don't make the Ethan week the week where you try to.
This ain't no spring break. Okay. We're not all spring chickens, okay?
You're not on Rumspringa, so bring it back. With that said, what we want to talk about this week on our podcast is all the stuff that we're looking forward to and that we're hoping to hear about or that comes out of E3 this year. We will be following all the news and writing along with the rest of the team that will be hands-on with a bunch of different things, with a bunch of different developers this week. We are covering the live chat, so by the time you hear this podcast, we will have already done our EA media briefing coverage and our Bethesda briefing coverage. But we will also be covering Microsoft's briefing on Monday. We'll be covering Ubisoft's briefing on Monday, as well as Sony's briefing. So make sure that you check out all those briefings on our site. The fastest way to find them, just go to electricsisterhood.com/live, and we will have all of the posts that have all of our live chats. You can join in on Twitter using the various hashtags that we've got listed in those posts. Or right from those posts, we've got a chat room that you can jump into on our site and just join a conversation with us about everything that we're seeing in the media briefings. We'd love to have you. We've got some polls in there that you can take, which will be fun to share. And we'll share some of the stuff that comes out of the live chats in our podcast next week about E3. Probably every subsequent podcast that we do where we're going to be bringing up stuff from E3. Because I do expect, even though there's quite a few people who are not going to exhibit at the show this year, which we've talked about in previous podcasts, there's still going to be a lot of news coming out of E3. You know, I don't know how much you stayed up on it, Amanda, but, you know, there are rumors that Microsoft's going to talk about their next console.
The minute I saw news that Nintendo was like, we're going to talk about our new experience, and it's a console.
And it's, like, so crazy, because first they said, actually, no, we're going to be at E3, but we're not talking about NX, and also we're not going to have the Link game. So everyone was like, well, then why the fuck are you going to be at E3?
Yeah, well, now they're all like, maybe we're going to talk about this.
And then they flipped, they're like, well, actually, we're going to do a treehouse, and we're probably going to talk about NX. And
the Zelda game.
We're going to talk about the Zelda game. And I was like, wait.
You
what?
Bitches.
You bitches.
Anyway. So it's like, but the minute that Nintendo brought that up, I'm like, so if Sony and Microsoft are smart, and we've seen them play this game, you know, where they don't mention anything about it. And then, by the way, boom, new console. What? And, like, people lost their shit. So I'm not surprised that Microsoft's like, you know what? Maybe we have a console that we want to talk about. And maybe it has wings. Like, maybe it makes Julian fries. And maybe it will, like, give you a back rub.
Oh, if I had a console that made Julianne fries, gave me a back rub, and let me play Overwatch, I mean, that console might be bae. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm just saying. I would not be surprised if Microsoft, you know, held that card in and then went and played Go Fucking Fish. Like,
well, here's the thing, right? Like, everybody's media briefing, the briefings are designed to get you excited, you the viewer, excited about what is to come in the near and also not so near future from these publishers and developers and platforms, right? You know, so a big chunk of Microsoft's briefing and Sony's briefing is the first-party things that they're doing and their third-party things that they're doing. If you're Sony and you're Microsoft, you definitely don't want to go into an E3 in a year where there's a possibility that Nintendo, which, let's face it, has been the underdog at E3 for quite some time now, to...
It's the friend that you acknowledge when you're just with them that they are a friend, but when you're with your cooler friends, you're kind of like, yeah, I know them. Like, we've hung out once or twice, but, like, we're not super close.
Right.
Like, that's how I feel like Nintendo is with Sony and Microsoft. Like, Sony and Microsoft are, like, the mean girls who keep Nintendo aroused so that they can feel better about themselves.
Oh, that's mean.
But true.
Slightly accurate. So, you know, you don't want to be Sony and Microsoft and be sitting in a year where there's a possibility that your thunder is going to be stolen by Nintendo talking about hardware that's coming that's new if you don't have something to share. And I'm not saying that Microsoft and Sony don't have anything to share, because, you know, we've seen from previous PAXes, people are getting excited about VR and there's some very interesting things happening, and both Sony and Microsoft have VR stuff that they can talk about. You know, we only got that one quick HoloLens look at Minecraft last year. So, you know, I expect that there's going to be something HoloLens-y.
No shit.
I didn't say that I'm going to share, like, all these predictions that are going to be, like, out there that nobody's going to expect and they're going to be amazed.
I'm just saying,
here's what I expect. Okay, and then there's what I want. So I expect there to be something HoloLens-y to, you know, keep the hardware future relevant stuff going for Microsoft. I expect Sony to double down on Vue and the, what are they calling it, PlayStation Neo now, the 4.5 box.
PlayStation's going to be too fucking expensive anyway.
No, it's $399. That's pretty much what everyone says that it's going to cost. So it's not going to be any more expensive than your existing one. And I do think that they are going about it the right way in that, you know, developers will merely have to patch their existing games that are on the platform to make them support the 4K5. There's nothing has to be dev special for the Neo box. You just have to patch your existing stuff if you want it to run at the 4K. Otherwise, it'll run at what it's running at currently on the current PlayStations. So there's really not a big impetus to get the Neo unless you want the best VR experience and you're looking to get a new PlayStation box. So I do think that Sony is going about that the right way. As far as, like, look, it's not a big rev, and it's really just for the people who want it. Like, do you want a 4K experience out of a console? You do? Great. Here's a new box that is just like our old box. It'll play all the games that you've been playing on your old box. And anybody who makes new stuff with the patch in it to support 4K, it'll run at 4K for you. Here you go. Like, that's a smart way to do it, as opposed to, here's a whole new box that you have to buy all new games, all new versions of all the games that you've been playing up till now if you want them on 4K. That would be a dumb way to do it. They didn't do that. So I'm giving credit where credit's due. But I expect them to talk a little bit more about 4K experience, especially because, you know, Sony does sell 4K TVs. So it makes sense that they would want you to pair your 4K Neo box with a 4K,
TV
that they hope you would buy, the Sony one, so they can make some money, right?
Here's my thought on the press thing, because, I mean, for the last few years, it really has, the first day has really kind of become a who won the presser junket. Like, who is the top dog that everyone's like, oh man, you need to go check this out. Last year, particularly for Sony, like, they kind of hit us with some big stuff. They hit us with Shenmue 3,
the Final Fantasy VII remake, which all of a sudden has dropped off the face of the earth, and the Return of the Last Guardian. So, like, we were all like, oh, shit, here it comes. And then, like, nothing got said. And then you're kind of like, what? Oh, yeah, Kingdom Hearts 3 also, like, what? So, I mean, like, they had such a big, impressive announcement in terms of titles.
But what turned into reality, right? Because, like you said, so here we are. I got real excited about Shenmue, and I was getting ready to kickstart that, and then all the stuff happened, like, immediately after, where they started changing, like, perks, and they started changing, like, what they actually wanted to achieve on the Kickstarter, and I was like, alright, so it's getting real shady now, and I didn't kickstart it. And that whole thing just kind of devolved into not really having any clarity about where money was going that was into the Kickstarter, how much Sony was actually pushing this game, and we haven't seen, really, anything evolve out of that Shenmue thing, right? Then we saw Last Guardian. We saw some of the gameplay from Last Guardian, and that looked fantastic, but we haven't seen anything new about that, to your point, since E3, okay? Now, fast forward, here we are, Kingdom Hearts 3, right? Which we've been waiting for Kingdom Hearts 3 for, like, 6 years now? 5-6 years? Okay. And you know, Rebirth and 2.5 and 2.5 Reloaded Remix.
And Birth by Sleep and blah, blah, blah.
And, you know, Birth by Your Mama, all those guys, right?
Whoa!
That's all fine and dandy. Fine and dandy. But
that's not what I want.
What I want is 3.
No, that's not what I want.
And what
it's not what I want.
And what I'm concerned about is, now with Disney Interactive being no more, you know, how much is falling on Disney Prime and Square? Like, what is the plan? Like, I really need this year for somebody to come out and reassure me that 3 is still on track, that it is going to happen. I need to see some new footage. Maybe show me.
I need to hear the damn opening song. I want them to leak, like, the
opening. Don't
leak,
just give it to me. I've been waiting patiently. Stop it. Either shit
and
or
don't give me none of that Leona Lewis bullshit like you did for Final Fantasy. Fuck that shit.
Like, shit or get off the pot. Either the game is happening and you can give me something new,
or it's not, and I need time to
and
to
I
cope.
Need time to grieve. So I really need Sony to shit or get off the pot here. And here's the thing, I don't know if it's Sony, because, you know, the last outing, Kingdom Hearts was available on the Xbox as well as the PlayStation, so it wasn't an exclusive.
Very true.
So I need Square to shit or get off the pot about Kingdom Hearts 3. Like, I need that to happen in this E3. I don't want any more teasers with a TBD. Like, no, it's either it's happening or it's not happening.
If there's a TBD anywhere near it, you need the GTFO.
Seriously, like, you have to.
Sorry, okay. Get the fuck out. Get out!
So I need to know what's going on with Kingdom Hearts 3. I need a ship date for Last Guardian.
Like, I don't even care if it's, like, 2020. I just want to know.
I need a ship date for Last Guardian. And the main reason that I need a ship date for Last Guardian is because I need to know whether or not, really and truly, I'm going to need a PlayStation Neo to play Guardian on or not. Because
I
think that's
probably
the reason why it's taken a while. I think that Guardian is one of those games that they wanted to launch with a Neo.
I need to know the ship date so that I can know if I have to put that on my wedding registry or not. That's why I need to know.
Okay,
because someone's gifting me that shit.
So I need to know about Guardian. I need to know about Kingdom Hearts 3. I would like to know about Shenmue 3 just because I really enjoyed Shenmue. You know, I played the original on my Dreamcast because that's what platform it came out on. And I think I actually still someplace have, I might not, but I think I do have in storage my original Shenmue discs, because it was one of the first games I remember had multi-discs to play the game that I played it. I just thought they were gorgeous discs, and I like how each of the characters was on a different disc. So I think I still have them, and they're in storage. But either way, I need to know about those guys. And then what I really want to have happen is, you know, VR I think is very interesting, and I'm very close to making a decision about VR, of whether or not...
I know! I'm so surprised at you!
Yeah, I'm basically trying to decide between going the HTC route or going the Vue route. And I just, I need some more information on software before I make that determination. But what I really want coming out of Sony is I want the price point and I want the ship date for the Neo. And I want to know how easy it'll be to actually transfer my stuff from my existing PlayStation to a Neo if I want to do that. Because, you know, a lot of my library for my PlayStation is digital. You know, I think I own like 2 discs for PlayStation 4 games, and everything else I've done digitally. And the biggest one that I've done digitally is Destiny, and I damn sure don't want to start from scratch again in Destiny, because that just won't happen. So I need to know, you know, how easy it's going to be to get my shit back if I do go the Neo route, if I decide to go with a Vue, because I will buy a Neo if I decide to go Vue VR. I could run it pretty well on my existing PlayStation, but, you know, for me, if I'm going to do an experience, I really want the best experience I possibly can have if I'm going to buy into any hardware. So I would want to get the new system. So I need a ship date, I need a price, I need it to be reasonable, I need to very easily be able to get my stuff off of PlayStation. So if I get those things out of Sony, I'll feel really good. Plus whatever third-party things that they have coming. Because let's be real, like, for all the briefings that happen at E3, third party is typically the big winner. Like, there are so few new IPs from the big guys. Most of their stuff is third party things that are exclusive either period or exclusive for a limited time on their platform. I would lose my shit if Crystal Dynamics was like, oh, by the way, we haven't been talking for a while because we've been working on this Tomb Raider. We just want to sprinkle this on here. Just,
oh my god!
Like, seriously, exactly.
It gives me the hype, the way that Beyonce dropped her Lemonade album. It's like, what?
You know, like,
you just can't control yourself. It's just so,
you know, we haven't heard shit from Quantic Dream in a while.
Well, I'm thinking Remedy.
You're thinking Remedy, because you're thinking of,
Detroit.
Yeah.
Detroit.
You know.
Oh my god, please someone tell me something about Detroit.
Right? This is what I'm saying. So, like, but again, that's, you know, a third party game. I want to know about it because we got the sprinkling last year. I need, like, you know, like, we got the appetizer, the aperitif last year. This year, I'm all about appetizers and encores, like entrees. Like, let's do this. I need to know about Detroit. I would love for there to be some new IP stuff, okay? Like, I don't know about you, but hey, Platinum, what the fuck's going on with Scalebound?
Right.
Like, what's going down? Because when I first saw it, I was like, fuck yeah, let's do this. Like, right now, I'll pre-order
it. Here's my wallet. I actually have money. I'll make the commitment.
Like, I was in the Amazon app on my personal phone while I was still live tweeting on the iPad the event because I was ready to order it, and that didn't happen. You know, I'm hoping that there's more stuff about backwards compatibility on the Xbox that's talked about, because I think, you know, that especially in the last couple of months, they've been doing a really good job of diversifying the games that come to backwards compatibility. Okay? I'll tell you right now who will win E3 for me. Okay?
Who? The one who does what?
Bulletstorm 2.
Oh, and we...
Okay? Mm-hmm. All right? Because we know the rumors out there, and we know the team has been working on quote-unquote an IP, okay?
Yep.
Which the IP reverted back to them. Okay, so it's not Epic's anymore. So I will tell you right now, but if during the Microsoft briefing, Bulletstorm 2 is announced, I don't care where... I don't care about Last Guardian, great, I'll buy it, I'll play it. Okay, that's cool. And, you know, hey, you give me the new theme song for KH3. Yep, I'll squee. But I will talk about nothing but Bulletstorm for the next 3 weeks. And I don't even care if it wouldn't be coming out until, like, 2018. Okay? But Bulletstorm was one of the most enjoyable shooters. I'm pretty sure at this point, Bulletstorm was the game that got me back into trying to play shooters. Because if I remember correctly, I was watching you play it, and it seemed like so much fun that I picked it up so that we could play, and I got addicted, and I kept playing longer than you did, and you had to play a little bit of catch-up, And you were a little pissed at me about that.
I know, it never happens that way, generally.
Because it never happened that way. And then I started down, that's when I started picking up Call of Duty games again. So I'm pretty sure that Bulletstorm was the thing that got me back into playing shooters. Because I had abandoned them for a long time because I had a bad experience. So, first of all, Bulletstorm 2 being real will be like the pinnacle of E3 for me. And then whoever has it, either first, exclusive, whatever, they get my money. Like, they get my money.
That is a good place, I think, to start. However, I think for me personally,
yeah,
because we know that some of the taste in my games are completely different from yours.
Yes.
And we have not heard a lot from our survival junket. Like, we haven't heard much. You know, and
I think that's going to change with Bethesda, though. I think Bethesda's going to surprise you. I think Bethesda's got another horror game. I don't know if it's an Evil Within, just because Evil had some issues. But I think that we're going to find out at their briefing. I think Bethesda's got another horror game in their bucket.
I hope so. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong. I know horror's not for everybody. But, I mean, the thing that I love to take away from E3 is that I tend to get games I'm excited about in all my basic wheelhouses for games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm never like, oh man, this year, like, there was no good action platformer game. Like, that's just never gonna happen.
That doesn't happen.
Ever.
Especially because of indie. Just because of the indie platform. Like, not gonna happen. Cuphead exists, so you're gonna have a great action platformer. Like, done.
Right. But I'm just saying that, like, every once in a while, though, I'll be like, oh man, nothing really popped out of, like, like, in the indie space. Like, nothing really was like, oh man, this is it. Or, oh man, like, this text-based game that's totally not my thing has totally, like... And sometimes that happens. And every once in a while, like, there's just nothing really new coming out in terms of the horror stuff, except for a while there when, you know, the 3D and the immersive and the Oculus, like, first came out. Like, you got all this stuff, and then all of a sudden, nothing managed to break through.
Yeah, I can't even imagine playing Outlast through Oculus. Like, I would pee myself.
And I think that's what they want. They want you to pee yourself. Like, I mean, like, last week I talked about, and I'm going to butcher the name because I never say it right.
Visage. Anytime.
Yes. Like, I know that that's still kind of, you know, in its indie baby space, but my God, like, already in its baby form, it is very promising. And if that could get put into the indie space at E3 with something new that we haven't seen through the alpha gameplay that they showed, like, I will find a way to trick my body into not making me want to throw up because I got to play that.
Well, we've talked about this. I think for you, again, VR in space where you can actually, like, flip weightless, that's the thing that caused your motion sickness because,
man,
like, when I played the cowboy shooter, I had none of that, but I was firmly planted on the ground. There was never any ability for me to, like, be flipping 360, and so, like, visually, man, I can never do that. So I think, so, like, horror VR would be rough. Fine for you. Okay.
I mean, I know that Visage, I know that they have the goal of coming to platform, like PS4 and stuff, but I feel like you kind of you're losing the point in that particular game when you have the ability to drop your remote and close your eyes or shield your face, whereas in that VR space, you
are... But that's only if it came to console... As right. Console only, not console, you know, view supported. So that's the thing you have to remember, is that PlayStation, more than likely, starting this holiday season, and I expect that that's what they're going to announce, is that a big chunk of VR stuff on console is going to start becoming available this holiday season. Okay, because there comes a point where you gotta shit or get off the pot. And the VR stuff that I tried with the Vue at PAX East was solid. So I think the Vue is pretty much ready to go for holiday. You know, there weren't that many glitches with it and that kind of stuff. So I think what we're going to hear coming out of PlayStation is that the Vue is going to be on sale past the pre-order stuff that has happened, I think, at this point. But it will be out and in people's homes this holiday season. Sony has said, and Microsoft has said, and they have whole divisions now to support indie. So, you know, there are the possibility of these indie VR games coming to console, not as just console play, but coming as VR console play. You know, so Visage could come to PlayStation as a Vue game. That's very possible now. And the same thing, you know, with HoloLens, once it's really defined, like an SDK will be available to developers. So developers will be able to add HoloLens type things into their games. I don't know how much augmented reality I want in my home or not. I think it just depends on how it's implemented, like everything is, you know. The main bone that I had to pick negatively with 3D TV was that I didn't want 3D in my home that went deep into my TV. If I was going to do...
out to you?
Exactly.
Would
I want it... If I want it... No, not because I'm lazy, although I am lazy. But the 3D experience to me that I've always had in my life has been the experience I had at the movie theater. And that's things coming at me. Not things going away from me. So if that's the experience I have, why would you say, here's a 3D experience in your home, and it's the complete opposite of everything that I'm used to? And not only that, but it requires special hardware, both on the TV side and then in the viewer side, you know, because you have to have the glasses, and those glasses were expensive. And so now if I wanted to watch something in 3D for the few broadcasts and the few movies that I could get at home that supported it, I would have to then support the habit of anybody I had coming over. It was just very expensive for a non-interactive experience, if that makes sense. You know, if something's coming at me, I'm going to dodge and move around it, and then we have, like, this fun experience. But if it's moving away from me, I'm not going to interact with it. And VR is completely different. VR, it is coming at me, and it's all around me, and it's this massive immersive experience because I've got headphones on, so the sound is, like, dramatically on me, and I could hear those ominous things that, you know, I miss when I play games out loud on my sound system, because there are all those nuanced things that are at those lower levels that I pick up when it's directly on my head, but I don't necessarily pick up when it's in, you know, big room sound. And I have this visual right in front of me that tracks as I move. That is a very immersive experience, and that is interesting to me, you know. So I think that VR has a lot more to offer to the gaming community than 3D did. And I think, you know, because we're far, far away from being able to actually have a holodeck, because that will be the shit. Okay? When that happens, it's like all over. But I think that VR is a good step in that direction to create an even more immersive experience for gamers. Because I think that's what we're looking for, and is more immersion. You know, the stories have gotten better now. You know, more
that
and
is
more...
true. Narrative has made some strong
leaps
strides.
Leaps and
here.
Bounds in just the last 3 years alone in games. And, you know, talent acquisition has grown by leaps and bounds. You know, it's no longer like a shady thing to do voiceover for video games. Now you have well-established actors that, you know, are bringing these great performances to these great characters, supporting these great narratives that we get to explore interactively. So it's just kind of another natural evolution of that. I'm pumped about E3 because here's what I know is going to happen. We know that Ubisoft is going to be talking about For Honor, which I got to go hands-on with last year, and initially I was like, this is not my kind of game, but it actually really is. It is a strategic brawler, basically, and you know how much I love me some brawlers.
You love to hit people, I know.
Okay, and it's set in medieval times, so while it feels like a simple game to play, it's actually very complex as far as countering and hitting, and I really enjoyed it, so I'm looking forward to For Honor. I'm damn sure looking forward to more information about the South Park game. Right? See, everybody forgot about the South Park game for a hot minute.
I didn't.
Okay, because nobody said anything since, you know, Matt and Trey came out and went, yeah, we said we'd never make another game, but as we finished making this game, we learned how to actually make games, and it was really fun. So we decided, fuck it, we're going to make another game. Okay? And now we're going to have the Coon and Friends stuff? Are you shitting me? So,
oh, man.
You know they're going to have some.
Now, they have to tread so careful with that. And they're going to test
Park.
That
no,
boundary.
They don't. That's the thing. Anybody who loves South Park knows they don't have to tread carefully with it. They don't. That's a beautiful thing. Okay? They can just let it ride. Fuck it. Everybody's letting Donald Trump ride. We can let a Coon and Friends joke run. I'm fine. Okay, so you know they're going to be talking about South Park. You know they're going to be talking about For Honor. We know that they're going to bring more Wildland stuff.
Yep.
We know they're going to talk about Watch Dogs 2 because they let that guy out early. Now, if you're letting Watch Dogs 2 out early, what else could you bring as a surprise then
that to is your true. Briefing?
Okay, because that I would think would have been like the big one, because no one thought that they would do another Watch Dogs game, because Watch Dogs did okay, but it didn't really have the impact and get the acclaim that they wanted it to and felt that it deserved when it came out, you know. And I had a lot of things negative to say about Watch Dogs. I did not finish the game. I had a lot of difficulty manipulating the character and getting through the environments and understanding what I needed to do when in playing the game, and so I completely lost interest in it. If you're talking about Watch Dogs 2 before your actual briefing goes off, then they've got to have at least two or three things that they believe are complete surprises that nobody's heard about for their briefing. Here's what I would like those things to be.
I'm ready.
Please, Jesus, Beyond Good and Evil 2.
I don't know, bro.
Okay, like, y'all have been dangling that hope in front of me for like 6.5, 7 years. Here's another shit to get off the pot. Okay, because BGD was a great game and had a great lead. And the teaser that they threw out like 5 years ago got me so ready. Like, so ready. Just do it. You know, like, I'm Shia LaBeouf in it. Just do it. Okay, BGD 2. I will in fact squee out loud. I might record it on video and put it out on Twitter. I will squee. 2. They said that, hey, we're not releasing an Assassin's game this year because we're taking some time because we want to get things right. And we were all like, all right, cool with that. But you can give me a little taste of what's to come because we know you're working on it. Okay? You had a 10-year roadmap for the entire Assassin's story. We know you haven't abandoned it. So, you know, give me a little taste. Give me some cool weapons. As long as it plays like Syndicate, we'll be fine. Because Syndicate played so well, it's ridiculous. Okay, so give me that. And then if you could just throw a little Splinter Cell in there, like, I'm set. Okay, you give me a year where I'm going to get a Ghost Recon game and a Splinter Cell game? Shit. So that's what I want out of UB. Because, again, I'm not a huge Just Dance fan. I know that's a really good franchise for them, and it does really well with the younger demographic. It's just not my thing. So, you know, whatever they do Just Dance-wise, like, that'll be fine. Whoopity-whoop. No big deal. But, like, that's what I want out of UB. And then, obviously, more Aisha Tyler. Like, that's really all I need. And I'm set out of UB.
It bothers me to no end because there are, like, so many different things that I want to experience out of E3, especially when we get games. Like, I mean, I want to be blown away. Like, as much as I love having games that, like, are my go-tos, that whenever they come out, like, they're going to get my money one way or another.
Right.
But, like, I'm really yearning for, like, a sleeper hit. Something to come out that, like, just by first glance, I'm going to get that I'm falling in love kind of deal. And, I mean, for me, because I've been reading a lot of stuff that's been coming out leading up to this, and really, I'm kind of, surprisingly for me,
yes,
I saw some news about Titanfall 2 a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I played some Titanfall at PAX East a while ago and, like, really kind of fell in love with that, but then didn't jump into the game. And I kind of feel like I missed out a lot in that. You know, so when I heard the inklings or saw little things about Titanfall 2, I was like, okay. I'm like, I'm getting this feeling, like this nostalgic feeling for something I didn't even play. Like, it just kind of like, really kind of want to know what's going on with that, even though I didn't play the first one at all. The closer and closer we get to E3, I'm like, if anything's going to come out about it, they're probably going to have something at E3. So I'm like, oh, please, please let that happen. Please. And so that has been giving me some angst and whatever. And then I would love to hear something about Mass Effect. because they brought that up a little bit, that we were done with Shepherd's story, but, like, clearly there was still more going on in that universe, and we've heard dick about that, and I kind of want something about that, like a name, or like a screenshot, or like a dialogue tree, like a weird dialogue tree that makes no sense, that once we get the game, it will make the most sense. I need that to happen for my life to have purpose. And then also, I want to know more about what's coming out of the dev house that made Life is Strange, because I've seen a few shots and they're fucking around with vampires, but like, I need more. I need more, because, I mean, I don't think we've had a really decent fandom lore-ish game, like, you know, with vampires or zombies, or I don't think we've had one in a really, really, really long time.
Right.
Like, I mean, okay, the Order 1886 or whatever, like, okay, we kind of had, like, some kind of mysticism in that, but, like,
oh, wait, did you not finish the Order?
No.
Yeah, okay, no, there's yeah. Mysticism.
Yeah.
Fucking werewolf.
Yeah, right, but, so that's why maybe I'm feeling, because I didn't finish it, so I know.
But
apparently, there's, the Life is Strange people have been showing some visuals, I'm imagining they're more FMVs than anything, of this game where there's a heck of a whole lot of violence in, like, London, and, like, it's all dark and brooding, which we know I'm all about.
Right.
So, I mean, sign me up for that dark, depressing toast. Mm-hmm. And it kind of gives me, like, the lady giggles. And I like vampires, clearly. I've always been a vampire girl.
Most women do like vampires. I mean, come on. Come on.
I mean, the only furry that I've, any furry entity that I've ever really kind of dug was Beast from X-Men. Like, he confused me sexually as a child, but I loved it.
How did we get on that from vampires?
Well, because furry, werewolf, Beast,
okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm following.
I had the roadmap. It made sense to me.
You did not give me a compass or a copy of the map to follow.
But anyway, and I think the trailer that they were kind of showing before for, I think it's called Vampire, but it's not spelt like vampire. It's like vampire with like a Y and an R in there somewhere.
Yes,
which is like a little hipster
of it. Yes.
It's the OG spelling, but I'm, like, that's kind of got, like, me tingling in, like, the survival horror-ish thing. Granted, I don't think this game is necessarily going to be that, but, like, if it's, like, Anne Rice before she got all Jesus'd in a game with, like, a hot guy voice protagonist.
That's awesome.
Well, like, Anne Rice was all, like,
wait,
vampires, darkness, depression, and then she was all, like, Jesus?
Ready? If it's more like Lestat and less like Jesus.
Yes. Oh my God. Please give me that in game form. I will eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I will do it. I promise.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit more about stuff that we want and stuff that we hope to hear about. And frankly, stuff that we don't want to hear about, because here's the thing. Okay, as much as we get excited about E3, and there are a lot of people in the industry who don't get excited about E3, you know, because it is a hard week, especially if you're an exhibitor, like, it's just nonstop, and if you're covering it, it's also mostly nonstop. Okay, it's a hard week, okay, it's a junket, and then you have some parties at the end of the day to, like, make it less suck, but if you go through all the parties, then you're up all night, so it's just a little more suck.
But even the parties, you're working, like you're not... You're never not on. You're forever on.
If you're actually covering the show as opposed to just attending to enjoy the show, you're always on.
Definitely always.
To your point, okay? You know, one of these years, the entire team is going to go, and I'm going to be able to let you guys just, like, cover the damn thing, and I'm just going to be able to enjoy it. Like, that's just going to be my, I'm going to see what I want to see thing. I'm not even going to worry about getting anything on the website. I'm going to go to a bunch of parties and just network, and that'll probably be, like, the last E3 that I go to. That'll be, like, my swan song, like, last lap. This is just for me to actually enjoy, because I've never actually been to an E3 to just enjoy the E3 and not, like, work it like a dog. So one year, probably the last year that I go to E3, like, that'll be my, like, just fucking enjoy the show for what it is. The week is not just all, like, shits and giggles, okay? There's a lot of stuff that gets announced that's really not exciting or, frankly, what anybody was really looking for. So, you know, what I don't want to hear about and what I don't want to see come out of E3, okay, is I don't want to hear about more games that were slated to come out, not coming out, and more houses closing. Okay, because there's a lot of people talking about, you know, E3 is over because so many people, you know, opted to either do their own thing or just, you know, not participate in the show and have any booth space. You know, Disney Interactive, after we heard the announcement about them closing shop, made sense of why they weren't going to have space. EA opting to not have their big floor space and do their play thing. I think, you know, it was a big shock to me, but as I thought about it, it made more sense. We were never able to get any appointments booked for EA. Like, they were very protective about who they actually, like, get appointments, and basically just left it as an open PlayStation floor, like, at a PAX where you would just walk up, stand in line, and be able to get on a station for a while. Like, it was very difficult, unless you were an IGN or a Kotaku or a Polygon, to be able to get any closed-door things with them or get an appointment with somebody to walk you through things, you know, especially for us. So, you know, it made more sense to instead treat this time as a, let's just open this up and have people come and play our games. Let's do it that way and have them build press for us, because that'll be more cost efficient for us. Because let's face it, EA doesn't really have a whole bunch of new things that they're bringing to the table, right?
Right.
You know, the NCAA games are off for a while because of all of the labor dispute with that stuff. So it's really Major League Sports stuff that they have. A couple of platformers, you know, with Battlefield and the Star Wars games. And I can't remember, do they still release Mirror's Edge? Is that EA or is that straight up just DICE, period?
Isn't that EA?
I think that's EA. You know, so they don't have, like, a big, big amount that they could probably be bringing new, right? Mirror's Edge Catalyst just came out. So they're not going to have
new mirrors. Have you had a chance mirrors. To touch that?
I haven't had a chance to touch it yet. It's on deck. But I could not get to it and put Overwatch down before we did this podcast, and I had to think about E3. So Mirror's Edge is on deck, like, for a couple of weeks after we get through, like, the major E3 stuff. It'll be something that I talk about on the podcast and probably on the website. What I don't want to hear about are closures of dev houses, because we've had enough of that this year. What I don't want to hear about is how E3 is over. I don't think E3 is over. I think E3 is going to evolve, okay? It constantly goes through this rev of all kinds of hype, really, 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 really large volumes of people coming to the show, and then nobody can get anything done and people complain about it. And so then they rebalance themselves and they bring down how many exhibitors they're going to have and they bring down how many press passes they're going to let people in with and all that kind of stuff, and it rejiggers. I do think that the industry is going to go through a shift, you know, because on-demand entertainment has shifted the entertainment industry as a whole, right? You look at what's going on with cable and they're floundering because more people are cutting cable and buying individual subscriptions to apps to stream to get their entertainment wherever they are, as opposed to being in their home. You know, it's not must-see TV from your living room anymore. It's must-see programming on my tablet or on my phone while I'm on the bus or a train or a plane, like, because I have my HBO Go and my Showtime Go and my...
I need to stream all of the things all of the time.
Well, it's just like, I want to be able to watch what I want to watch when I'm available to watch it, as opposed to when you tell me it's on. Okay, of course I'm going to opt for the thing that fits my schedule more than fits your schedule. You know, but the industry is changing as a whole. Now you have more and more movies that are coming out in the theater the same day as their digital component is being released. Like, a lot of documentaries and indie movies are releasing their stuff digitally, you know, through Amazon Prime and iTunes and, you know, Google Play and all that stuff, the same time that they're hitting the theater if they're in limited release, which is allowing them to be found and be discovered and actually make some money, as opposed to, you know, not, because they're only playing in art houses that, like, 12 people know about. You know, the industry is changing as a whole. So, you know, E3 has to change. Gamescom has to change. you know, so I think what you'll see probably next year with E3 is that there will be a bunch of developers that have much larger booths, bigger than the booths that they're going to have this year. You're going to see a bigger presence for indie because they're going to drop the prices to allow more indies in, because more and more indies are going to be making deals with the developers. Like, look at Cuphead. Like, that game is going to be huge.
Yeah, it is.
Okay? You know, No Man's Sky, which it keeps getting pushed back, but it's because it's a very ambitious project.
It's a very huge bitch.
That's still an independent game. Like, look at the stuff that we know that's coming from Adult Swim games. Right?
Oh my
God. Like, it changes the landscape. And so you're going to have more indie presence at E3. And there's going to be a lot of people that are discovering those for the first time, because indies haven't been at these big trade shows. They've only been at things like PAXs and MAGFests and things like that. So the landscape changes. So who comes and covers the show is going to change. I think that, you know, in this new space, what ESA needs to learn from, you know, the success that Microsoft is having with their fan fests and Sony is having with theirs, because they're having a fan event during E3. So is UB. They have their UB lounge that did really well last year. They're doing that as well again this year on top of their briefing. What they will discover is that there needs to be this balance between industry-only access and public access. You know, because we've talked about this before. Most of the people in the industry, and I'm generalizing here, and it's really mean, but it is quite honest. A big chunk of the people that are in the industry have been in the industry for a long time, and they're very jaded. Like, they've worked this beat forever, and you can tell that there's not the same awe and passion as 3 years ago in their stuff, in their coverage of events like this, as now. And that just happens when you stay doing the same thing for a long period of time. You lose the sense of wonder about it, unless you work to find the wonder all the time. Right? And so there are a lot of people that E3 is a grind. There is no joy. It's just another thing that they have to do in order to collect their check next week. And so they do it and they get it done and they get the fuck out. And that doesn't really present a great experience for the readers and the watchers of those streams and things like that. You gotta be excited about the new. And you gotta be honest about your excitement. And if you're not excited about it, then you shouldn't cover it. Okay, because that just, it's going to show in your writing and it's going to flavor people a certain kind of way. But you need to balance the need for professionals being able to access the things that they need to do their coverage that they need to do for their job with the temperament of people who are going to have a sense of wonder and excitement about your stuff. I think that there's a meld somewhere in the middle of E3 being and having a trade-only section and a open to the public section. I think that what you could do, because the LA Convention Center is huge and they're still at the Convention Center for a while, is that you could split it and you could have a open to the public section, you know, make that North Hall, so that Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo could have their open to the public thing and have all their third party booths in there for their games, and that could be open to the public. People could buy tickets every day and come in and get to play that thing, and they can do interviews with, you know, people playing the games and get their, you know, knee-jerk reaction stuff, and that can be the stuff that they stream. And then over in South Hall, have just the industry-only stuff. And you could still have booths that you have your on-floor stuff and your behind-closed-door stuff, and that's all appointment-only, and you've got to be badged in and badged out to get around there. You know, and then you could have, you know, your offsite stuff that you still do, you know, to give the journals an experience and swag. But, you know, I think that there is a mixture of supporting fan base and industry base. Or just taking over LA Live and making that whole area open to the public and letting whoever wants to bring stuff to the public and let them touch and play during the briefing, let them do that.
I like the sound of that.
You know,
here's the thing, though. Because
you've got the Nokia Center, like, right fucking there. And you have the Staples Center right fucking there. And there's also, nothing going on in the Staples Center during the day. So you could very easily take the Staples Center and make that your open to the public space and let everybody who's got their industry things going on at the convention center bring their fan fest type things to the Staples Center or to the Nokia Center or to LA Live right there.
As a consumer, yes. not media, just a consumer, someone who goes and buys, plays, and enjoys. I love the idea of having a public section that has some elements of what the professional side would have. However, from a business, because, I mean, granted, we don't know what kind of budgets these dev houses sit on for marketing and to go out to these type of events and to do this. But when I think of having two different things, I'm thinking about two different cost points. I'm thinking about budget. I'm thinking about, you know, how do you allocate what to where? And, well, like, that could be a big...
It could be, absolutely. But here's what you have to remember about all that. Everybody currently right now that goes to E3 is industry. Everybody that goes to E3 that touches a game is more than likely not going to buy that game. You are more than likely going to give them a copy of the game for free so that they will actually do a review when the game comes out. So it's not a moneymaker on that point. Okay? Nobody that... Let me not generalize. 90% of the people that check out a game at E3 are not going to pre-order that game at E3. Like, unless you're enthusiast press and you don't have any contact with the thing, then you're going to order the game. But more than likely, you're going to make a contact to get on their press release list and to get a copy of that game, right? So there's low potential for them to make any money as far as sales go at the industry event. It's all about getting press and pub. So sweet talking the industry people that are walking through the door. You cannot tell me that there's no business that would go, okay, so we're going to do this industry thing because we need the press and the pub. We've got a $90,000 budget. We can do a smaller booth, still do the same amount of appointments with the industry people with half of that budget, take another half of that budget, and set up a space over in the open to public thing where we can have lines where you can pre-order the new accessories, you can pre-order the new game. If you do, we'll give you some kind of piece of swag and actually be selling that to offset the cost of what you're doing on the industry side.
Okay.
From a marketing perspective, I'm going to opt to do that every time. Because if there's a way for me to make money, not just get press and pub, and pay for my booth space when the show has ended, as opposed to hoping that I got enough press and pub that when the game releases, I will have made that investment back. I think it's just smart business. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see Microsoft doing FanFest. Like, did you see the bags, what's in the bags that people are gonna get at FanFest this year?
No.
Okay, so you should check that out. And it's the main reason that, like, Microsoft is gonna have people lined up around the block at their Microsoft store to try and get into FanFest, because those people, they're getting a bomb-ass swag bag. Like, there's really cool stuff in it. And, again, there's a cost for all that stuff. But these are people that will, in fact, put money into the ecosystem. The fans will do that. Not the jaded industry people that go, oh, shit, yeah, Microsoft's got 3 new games. I gotta write about them before the day is out. They're not gonna go to Amazon or GameStop and pre-order that game. They're going to expect that if you want a full review, you're going to send it to me 3 weeks early. And if you don't, well, I'm not going to review it. I'm just going to do my press pub thing that I needed to do here. Thanks so much. Bye. So I do think that there is a need to balance E3. Not all trade shows. I don't think Tokyo Game Show needs it. I don't think that, you know, Gamescom is open to the public, so it's already got its focus. But I do think that E3, what they're going to learn this year, based off of the success that all the fan events that UB and Microsoft and Sony are going to do, because I think they're going to do really well, I think that they're going to learn that E3 needs to somehow have a balance of industry only and open to the public. And to me, what makes the most sense is, you know, Microsoft owns, I don't even think they call it the Nokia Center anymore, the Nokia Theater anymore. I think they call it something else now. I think it's just the Microsoft Center. I can't remember if they've changed the naming rights or not yet. But they own the Nokia Center. Okay? That's right there at LA Live. And how easy would it be to set up something open to the public there at the Nokia Center that bleeds out into LA Live? Because they're constantly having stuff going on in that midsection to keep people coming. There's people you can pick up naturally that just are exploring the downtown area. And that is a place where you are actually selling stuff. I mean, think of how successful PAX is, right? A massive chunk of that show floor is devoted to actually pre-ordering and selling merch. That's how people pay for that booth space that they have, is they are selling their content.
You're absolutely
right. Can you remember any E3 that you were at someone's booth and you had the ability from their booth to buy anything? No, because that's not what it was set up to do. But if you add that layer on, it becomes a much more attractive event for someone who sells product or wants to move product to do. Because if I can get my media people at the same time as my consumer for one price over the course of 3 days, that's great. I mean, think about it. I announce on Monday, let's just say I'm going to take UBS an example. I announce on Monday, right, at my media briefing, that you can buy, you pre-order right now, Beyond Good and Evil 2, and it's got a collector's edition that has all this stuff. And it's going to go on sale tomorrow. And it's going to exclusively be available for pre-order for 2 hours tomorrow over at our fan thing at the Nokia Center. And I put that out on my live stream. Do you not think that is going to motivate any of the enthusiast press that are there to try and make that happen?
Oh, you're right, and absolutely will.
Plus the public. Like, how great is that balance? I make my hype on Monday, and immediately Tuesday morning, I can see the financial benefit of it. And I can video that, because we live on social. So now I can have my street team over at LA Live filming everybody lining up early to try and get the... And I create more hype without the need of having to pull my traditional media journalists into that, who will just think, oh, here's another marketing ploy. Right? I can generate genuine enthusiasm from consumers and show the consumer base that enthusiasm and let my industry people get their hands on behind closed doors that they don't have to wait 3 hours for. So that's how I think E3 evolves and it doesn't die. And it has this component because EA pulled out of the show floor to do their own public thing. Microsoft is still on the show floor, but they've got their fan fest thing going on and probably are going to let those fans in just like they did last year because they want that excitement from the consumer base to show that back. Because there's not the same level of excitement of a video game fan that you have from most of the journalists, especially International Pub, that are covering games. You know, I think it's why E3 has let in more enthusiast journalists and streamers and bloggers, because we do get excited about the games that we see that we love and the franchises that we love. But you can't make the entire show all of us, because you still got to get into Forbes and you still got to get into the Times and you still got to get, you know, hopefully into Variety now, because Variety is covering video games, you know, so you've got to balance all these spaces. So I think you do that. You have your industry-only thing. You have your open-to-the-public thing. You let whoever wants to have their open-to-the-public thing be that and have it. And it be a fun experience, but also be a way for you to actually sell your merch. EA will be back on the floor because they will have their section open to the public in your public thing. And they'll be able to deal with their industry people and not have to fly those people when they want them to their headquarters. You know, it's more bang for your buck if I have them both in one space. So I think E3 evolves. And that's what I want to hear most out of this E3, besides Bulletstorm 2 and Beyond Good and Evil 2. Besides those two things, I want to hear about how E3 has evolved. And next year, it's going to have this dedicated, because right now everybody's building it themselves, but it will have a dedicated open to the public component. And I think that, like, that's the holy grail. Like, can you imagine coming out of being hands-on with a game and then walking out of the building and seeing people in public play it and being able to do just walk-up interviews and be like, all right, so how do you feel about this game? Because I just tried it inside and blah, 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 blah. What's up? like that's invaluable to a company. So that's what I think.
I agree. I think you're right.
I'm not trying to be right. I think that that's the best evolution.
I think a merger of these two conflicting presences in conventions has to happen. Because, I mean, we are evolving as, you know, a gamer, a consumer, a reporter. Like, there are so many people who wear multiple hats that come to these things with so many different ideas in mind. And if they presented it in such a way that allowed all those facets of a person to be satisfied, then I think they would have, like, they'd have the winning combination.
Agreed. And so I think E3 evolves, and that's how it stays relevant. That's how it stays in the black.
Right?
You know, because if it doesn't, then people are going to realize it's actually cheaper for me to invite who I want, to come and see me when I want, and to have a public component.
When I want.
And so then it will have a problem on its hands. So I think E3 evolves, and it becomes a mixed audience event. And that's how, you know, the next few years, it changes. Because the landscape of coverage changes. You know, you want big YouTube streamers, and they're not necessarily media. But, you know, you want to have, you know, the Green Skulls and the PewDiePies and, you know, the Escapists and, you know, us and Gamertag Radio and Marooners Rock. Like, you want all of us there because we're passionate about these games and we're coming on our dimes more than often than not. You want us there and you want Forbes and Variety there. You also want the public there to buy your shit.
Buy my shit.
Yeah. So, we're running low on time. I'm just really quickly going to mention one thing because I don't want it to get away from me because I think it's really important and it's timely. So, about Watch Dogs 2, I was really excited when I saw the announcement from Yubi. Again, not because I was a massive Watch Dogs fan. Had issues. I mentioned that already. But I thought it was really interesting that the lead character in the game, because it's a whole new lead, a guy named Marcus, is a black hacktivist. Okay, and he's a cool-looking character, by the way. It was really interesting to see the reaction of people, because a big chunk of people were like, all right, Watch Dogs 2, wasn't really expecting it, but here it comes, and here's what I'm kind of, like, interested in seeing what happens, and it's set in San Francisco and things like that. But I think more telling of the environment that we're in right now is that there was a massive uproar. I shouldn't say massive uproar, but...
considerable sound of dissonance and disapproval.
There is a considerable amount of disapproval that started making the rounds on the internet from the gaming community, specifically with people who were not thrilled that the lead character was a black guy. And I was floored by this.
Oh man, I've read maybe 2 or 3 articles about this, and I've kept my mouth shut, so I'm kind of glad that you brought this up.
Because I've been running my mouth most of this podcast.
So the first one, like, it just kind of hit my Facebook, and I was like, oh, no. Because I don't know how many of our listeners pay attention to other things, but right before this broke out, you know, the whole Miss America thing broke out, and people lost their shit over that. And just to paraphrase that, our current Miss USA is this wonderful black woman out of D.C., who also is in the Army and is like...
A total badass. Gorgeous. Smart and a badass.
And has served our country and has let us keep our liberties. But anyway, but the minute that happened, anybody who has like an IQ less than 7 had something negative and condescending and like pushing back tolerance like 20, 35 plus years, which is sickening to your stomach. Because for one, this woman is in a profession that is male-dominated already on top of that. And we're not even going into race, just male-dominated, you know, industry. And is the leader of her unit and faces horrors that we deign to even look at bad captions on photos in magazines. And
you're just going to be pissed that she can't represent American beauty because she's black? Get the fuck out of here. All right, so back to the game.
So anyway, so but I'm just saying, but here, so we already had people who are already like, oh, she's black, she has no right to represent us, blah, blah, blah. So like people are kind of sitting on that. And then this came out and like people just seem to jump from this to now this. And one of the articles that I read about, literally the person who was griping was literally just like, look, everyone seems to have an issue with the fact that, you know, all right, he's a hacker, which when you think about hackers, what do you think about? You think about like punk rocky, like disinfected youth who hate their parents and want to like break into the Pentagon,
but
and like
why do you be, think like, that? And you think because, that because of movies that you've seen.
Right, exactly. So like here's this conceived notion that, you know, Hollywood has put out there. So and because it's not something you regularly see, you're quick to deject it. And like, oh, well, Marcus is black and he lives in San Francisco and there's like barely any black people in San Francisco.
Bullshit!
As of right now, 6% of San Franciscans are black. And here is the reason for that. And I mean, it's dropped considerably. Like, and I love this particular, this writer who wrote this out, because like, yeah, currently right now it's 6% and it's clearly the lowest, because the highest it's ever been has been 13%. And the reason why you're not seeing that many is because they're being pushed out because of the cost of living in San Francisco.
Because it costs out the booty hole to live in San Francisco.
It does. Okay. But anyway, going back to Marcus. So yeah, black hacktivist living in Oakland, which depending on, you know, his story, because we don't know what pushed his family to Oakland. Like, he could have been living in San Francisco, and because of the cost of living got pushed out. So, like, there are
ways. That's why you go to Oakland.
But you can't
afford to live in San Francisco.
But I think a lot of people are getting their panties up in a bunch, because I think people are like, so are you black people? Or, you know, and I hate to even talk like that because it just seems like I'm taking sides.
Just do it.
I think people, black people, are getting upset that people are having issues with this because, like, do you assume that black people don't have the mental, intellectual capability to learn this stuff to then use it? Like, do you think that we're all dumb and that we don't have this, these same type of desires that you do as, look, you know, Caucasian people?
At the end of the day, here's the deal. And I feel like it's our generation and the generation underneath us, it's our job to just nip this shit in the bud. Because stereotypes don't mean shit. Okay? They don't. They shouldn't. They are just a holdover.
Way to keep everyone separate.
Well, they are, but they are really just a thing that is a holdover that is driven back.
It is a social disease. It's a social disease that infects.
Can I say my words?
I'm sorry.
Okay. But stereotypes are bullshit, and they are just a way to keep us separated, and they are a holdover from buying into what you are fed through media as being the golden truth of the way things are in the world. They are not the case. Anybody from any race, from any background, from any sexual orientation can do and be anything. Okay? Black people can love heavy metal music. Okay?
I love Coheed and Cambria.
Okay? All right? I'd put them more on the alternative side than heavy metal, but whatever.
I know, but I'm just saying. But I like them.
So I'm saying. Okay? And it is
not, I love Def Leppard.
Okay? It is not about being predisposed to anything or anything like that. You can enjoy what you can enjoy. Everyone has aptitude, and whatever way you apply it will allow you to achieve whatever the things that you want to achieve. So, speaking as a black person, you can be nerdy. Why, hell, I am. Okay?
Me too!
You can also not have rhythm. It happens.
I used to not have rhythm. Oh, bro. I now have rhythm.
Okay? So, I'm tired of this predisposition stuff. I'm tired of people saying, oh, well, blah, blah, blah can't be this because they're that. It's bullshit. Get over it. Stop it. So I implore everybody that is listening to this podcast, challenge all these norms. You see people talking bullshit about, oh, the lead character of this can't be that because traditionally they're this. Fuck tradition. Do it. I am so in love with Yubi for making this lead character of a massive franchise for them. Because it is now a massive franchise, because they have been working on this game for a while, obviously, to make that lead character a black person. Yubi has done a phenomenal job of really representing diversity across their games, and this is just driving it home that they are not giving up on it, and they believe that they can move a frontline AAA game with a black lead. So, to the haters, fuck you all. I will be playing Watch Dogs 2. And I will be playing it not just because Marcus is black, but I will be playing it to support and show my support for challenging the norms of what a lead character can and should look like in a AAA title. E3, so hype, so hype, so much hype, so much hype. I cannot say, like, I haven't been this excited for an E3, really, in a couple of years. And the fact that I'm not in LA is just, I'm probably making it a little bit higher, but it doesn't matter. New stuff is coming, guys. There's going to be things that we don't know about, probably some new IPs. There's going to be games that we've been waiting for, Battletoads, please Jesus, and other things that it's a great, great time this next week to be a fan of gaming. So please make sure that you check out our coverage on our website. Just go to electricsisterhood.com. You can check out the E3 events. We'll have all of our new coverage on our homepage. Definitely join us for our live chats, electricsisterhood.com/live. They'll all be there as they go off. Our chats start 10 minutes before each of the briefings go off. We've got a post in there that has the entire schedule of all of them. So please make sure, jump into the Twitter chat, hit us up, be part of our conversation, check out all of our coverage all week long, share it with your friends, engage with us on Facebook, recommend us to friends. It's going to be a fun, fun week to nerd out about games with us, so make sure that you do it. As I said, half of our team is going to be there at the event all week long, so definitely follow them on Twitter and engage with them. Let them know if there's something that you want them to see. But I'm not going to pimp everybody this week because we're low on time and it's really about E3. So engage with us, facebook.com/landofesh, on Twitter at ESH News. The entire team is going to be rocking E3 and I cannot wait. Cannot wait. So be part of it. As always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, where we talk more about E3.
E3.
We're out.